And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on one of these two topics. My next guest writes about Karl Rove, a key figure in Republican politics for over a decade. We'll look at Rove's influence on American politics, particularly his involvement in two crucial Supreme Court decisions that changed the country forever, from his book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. Craig Unger is the author of the New York Times best-selling House of Bush, House of Sod. He appears frequently as an analyst on CNN and the ABC radio network and other broadcast outlets. He's the former deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine. He has written about George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush for The New Yorker, Esquire, and Vanity Fair. He lives and works in New York City, joining us from New York. Hi, Craig. How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for touching on this subject. A lot of people don't know about it, and Karl Rove, his influence that he has. And I'm just going to start with a general question. Does Karl Rove control the Republican Party in the United States?
Well, in a way, yes. I think the great untold story of the election is that it's not just Obama against Romney, it's Obama against Rove. And today, Rove oversees about $1 billion that is going to be spent in the next 7 weeks, and it is the greatest single expenditure of political advertising in history.
Well, don't we know it? It benefits radio stations, television stations across the country, including KVTA, no doubt about that. Well, talk to us, though. How did he gain this power? Because that really comes back to the central point of the two Supreme Court decisions.
Right. Well, a lot of people thought of him as a creature of the Bush family. He was known as Bush's brain, you may recall. And when Bush left power after 2008, it seemed that Karl Rove was finished. He'd been forced out of the White House in 2007. He was the target of two of the biggest scandals of the Bush era, the Valerie Plame affair and the U.S. Attorney scandal. And Bush left office with a 22% approval rating, the worst of any American president in history. So even Republicans thought he was tainted. But just a year after Obama took office, a couple of things happened. And one was the United States Supreme Court made a ruling in the Citizens United decision, Citizens United case. And that opened the floodgate for hundreds and hundreds of millions of campaign contributions, many of them secret. And that's what we're seeing today. It ended up with Rove becoming the king of the super PACs.
Well, that he did, and the Citizens United is right now still a very controversial decision about how much money can be thrown into political events. My guest is Craig Unger. But, Craig, this isn't the first time that Karl Rove actually used the judiciary to gain his influence, to gain his means. So tell us the history behind this. How did he actually start this process in the state of Texas and then just transfer it to the bigger stage of the United States?
Right. Well, starting out in Texas in the 80s, the Texas Republican Party was very weak, and frankly, Karl Rove was something of a nobody back then. And the Republican Party was weak because there were powerful conservative Democrats like John Conley and Lloyd Benson and so forth. So Rove had to figure out a way to round that, and he went to Big Tobacco, to Philip Morris. He went to big pharmaceutical companies, and he said, look, you guys risk billions and billions of dollars in product liability lawsuits. And the cigarette companies really faced that big time. They had a multi-hundred billion dollar settlement. And he said, I can save you billions of dollars if you just donate a few million to my candidates. And he created political action committees along the line to promote the issue of tort reform. That is reforming laws that would, in a way that would protect these huge pharmaceutical and tobacco companies. And in doing that, he created a cash machine for the Republican Party. And this was sort of a precursor of what we're seeing today. Today, of course, you have these multi-billionaires like Sheldon Adelson, who says he's putting in $100 million in the current election. The Koch brothers, again, multi-billionaires, will put in as much as $400 million. And Rove is on top of this gigantic machine right now.
All right. But how did he parlay that experience in Texas into the judiciary, and then how does that play forward to the year 2000? But let's start with Texas. How did he use that influence to influence the Texas Supreme Court?
Well, in Texas, when he started out, the Texas Supreme Court was almost entirely Democratic, and he took those financial contributions and he put them into electoral races for the Texas Supreme Court. He backed candidates in the Texas State Legislature, and of course, as governor, he put in George W. Bush. And that's sort of how he got his start. George Bush had tried and failed to win a seat in Congress in 78, and suddenly he was the guy behind George Bush, and he had roped in these enormously wealthy Texas billionaires who were donors, and they've been with him now for about 30 years. They were banking him then, and they're also making contributions today in American Crossroads.
All right, my guest is Craig Unger, author of the book Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. So there he is. He has helped George Bush become the governor of Texas. Fast forward to the year 2000, and how did Karl Rove use his experience with the Texas judiciary to have a major impact on American politics in 2000?
Well, of course, he was the beneficiary of another United States Supreme Court decision, and that is, of course, one of the most controversial in history, Bush v. Gore. And the United States Supreme Court made George W. Bush president of the United States. It was really that more than either the electoral vote or even the popular vote, which went for Gore, of course. And once he was in power, he played a huge role in the judiciary. He made sure that the new attorney general was one of his clients, John Ashcroft. And he began over playing a big role in the selection of United States attorneys. And if you remember that U.S. attorney scandal, a lot of people think of it as the firing of eight U.S. attorneys who were really not towing the party line of the Republican Party. But there's another side to it that I think is even more important. And that is, what about the U.S. attorneys who were towing the line? What were they up to? And the answer is they were prosecuting Democrats, and they prosecuted hundreds of Democratic politicians. And Rove was overseeing it, and I think the most egregious example just happened. We saw Don Siegelman, who just 2 days ago, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, and he's being locked up for about 7 years, and I think it's really completely a political prosecution.
Well, give us the details behind it, because you do cite this as an egregious example. So a Democratic governor, Don Siegelman of Alabama, he's in prison for what? How did they nail him?
Well, he was convicted of bribery, but this is what really happened. It turns out that Karl Rove had an associate in Alabama named Bill Canary, and Bill Canary would get behind the big Republican races in Alabama, the gubernatorial race, the senatorial race, and so forth, and was backing a guy named Bob Riley, who was the current governor of Alabama. Well, Bill Canary was married to an attorney named Laura Canary, and Rove made sure she was appointed United States attorney. So what that meant was, come election time, Bill Canary's candidate would be facing Don Siegelman, and Bill Canary could get his wife, Laura, to indict Don Siegelman. And the charges, as I say, were bribery. But what Siegelman did is what almost every politician in the country does, is he gave an appointment, in this case an unpaid appointment, to a campaign contributor. Don Siegelman got $0 from this. A politician like George W. Bush has done this with more than 100 campaign contributors, but he's never been prosecuted. But in this case, Don Siegelman was, and he has been given more 84 months in jail.
My guest is Craig Unger, author of the book Boss Rove. So, Craig, obviously you're raising the flag of crony capitalism here, and it really points to that, or at least indicates that, based on this example. The question is, how is this different than what's been going on, crony capitalism different than what's been going on for centuries in the United States?
Well, I mean, politics is a really, it's a blood sport. It's a rugged business. There's no question about that. But in the case of the Siegelman affair and what you have with the U.S. attorneys, I think you have, selective prosecution. And I think there's nothing more unhealthy to a democracy than when a set of laws is used only to prosecute one group of people, and that's what Rove was doing with the Democrats. We found over 200 politicians in Bush's first term alone who were indicted and investigated and indicted. 85% of them were Democrats, and there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that Democrats are seven times more likely to be corrupt than Republicans. So that's one thing. In addition, I mean, you'll see in the current campaign, there's a real voter suppression campaign. That's not what Rove calls it, of course. He talks about voter fraud, and there have to be laws that make voters have identification. Well, the truth is, these are laws, and they're being put forth in more than 30 states, that will keep minorities from voting, they'll keep the elderly from voting, they'll keep college students from voting. All those groups lean Democratic, and potentially this could disenfranchise as many as 21 million eligible voters.
Well, while that is true, Craig, when only 21% of our eligible voters turn out here in Ventura County to vote in any election, I'm not so sure how significant that's going to be. But let me go back to voter registration, because this is topical. This is on everybody's minds right now. You know, you look at voter registration, and the cause behind it, or the rationale behind it, is voter fraud, that people are actually going in and voting under false pretenses. You've uncovered some statistics, however, that are very revealing. What, in fact, do the statistics tell us?
Well, the voter fraud is itself a fraud, and there's been a study done by the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, and it found only 10 or 12 cases of voter fraud in the last few years. I've seen other studies of this. This is infinitesimal. You have more of a chance of being struck by lightning than someone posing as you in voting. People may occasionally do pranks and register as Mickey Mouse or whatever, but Mickey Mouse never shows up and votes. It just doesn't happen. And the only reason for these laws is to keep minorities from voting. It's very much like Jim Crow was in the era before the Civil Rights Act. It's sometimes being called Jim Crow 2.0. It's also being called Juan Crow, and that's because it's aimed so much at Hispanics. Right now, one of the big threats to the Republican Party is the Hispanic time bomb. There are about 50 million Hispanics in the United States now. In 2020, there'll be 70 million. They have the potential to change the electorate enormously, and they tend to vote heavily Democratic when they vote. There's been a low voter turnout. But states like Texas alone has 10 million Hispanics. Arizona has a big Hispanic population. And a big turnout by Hispanics in those states can flip those states from red to blue.
Well, they can. My guest is Gary Unger, but I'm going to challenge you there just a little bit, Gary, because George W. Bush actually had a very large percentage of the Hispanic vote voting for him, and he is a noted Republican. So I'm not sure if that stands up.
He did, under Rove, make a big point of courting the Republican vote. But since then, there's been this wave of immigration reform in the Republican Party, and it's alienated a lot of Hispanics.
All right. My guest is Craig Unger. He's the author of the book Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And let's stay on a current theme, if we can, for just a minute, Craig, here, because in more recent news, how is Karl Rove's impact being felt in the Missouri Senate race with Representative Todd Akin seeking to defeat Claire McCaskill?
Right. Well, here you see Rove trying to act as party boss and encountering a lot of resistance. And Rove has never been really fond of the Tea Party. He's wanted to accommodate them because they have these big money contributors like the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, and so forth. But in Missouri, he encountered a candidate who at first he liked. And Todd Akin had raised about $2.2 million himself, but Rove had plowed in more than $15 million from American Crossroads. Suddenly, Akin makes his famous and sort of notorious remark about legitimate rape, and Rove decided to pull the rug out from under him. The reason, of course, is that this is really hurting the Republicans, not just in Missouri, but nationally with the gender gap. This is something that, of course, has alienated a lot of women voters. And Rove immediately cut off all funding to Akin and called for him to step down from the race. And to everyone's astonishment, Akin has continued to fight, and he's still in the race. And Rove even went so far quite recently as to tell a group of donors, if you see Todd Akin ending up murdered, don't come looking for me. And this has caused a huge uproar in the Republican Party.
Well, as well it should. But I guess my point about that is, despite the threats of pulling $5 million from American Crossroads funding, Akin is still in the race. Doesn't this show that Karl Rove doesn't have the power within the Republican Party that you write about?
Well, he's not all-powerful, but no. I mean, he has pulled the money out from under him, and it's not clear that Akin has enough to really continue to do a strong race. He's standing up. I'm surprised at how strong he's been, but this is a real fight. And what it shows more than anything is that there is a schism in the Republican Party, and that Rove represents the old guard, the Bush era, the Republican establishment, people like him and Ed Gillespie and some hangers-on from the Bush era. And there's a fairly sharp break between them and the Tea Partiers. And what we're going to watch in the coming times is, will Rove continue to? Will he try to accommodate them and make friends with, say, Paul Ryan, who may be the new face of the Republican Party and the favorite of the Tea Partiers? Or will, if Romney loses, will he come back in 4 years with Jeb Bush, who, of course, would represent the old guard?
Only time will tell. My guest has been Craig Unger, author of the book Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. Craig, you've probably intrigued a lot of people, piqued their interest. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, I have a website, and it's called bossrove.com, and you'll see more about my appearances. You can read more about the book. And there was an excerpt in Vanity Fair last month, which is still on the Internet.
That is great. Craig, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.